Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And, Jim, we start with the good. We've pretty well documented the problems with the top of the Republican ticket, but that doesn't mean there's not some emerging good news for Republicans in general this year. This is courtesy of Politico. Donald Trump's poll numbers remain dire, although we can point out there's been some better ones over the weekend, but he can point to at least one ray of hope for a turnaround. Republicans have continued gaining ground in recent months in voter registration in Florida, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Iowa, while the late surge in Democratic registrations relative to Republican registrations that occurred in battleground states during the final months of the 2012 election had not been replicated in numbers released in early August. Louisiana pollster John Kubelon, if I'm saying that right, says the atmospherics of voter registration trends in those states do not point to a strong Democratic year. So that's one negative the Trump campaign does not have to deal with at this point. The voter registration data I'm seeing does not support the idea of a surge in Democratic voter enthusiasm. They give a couple of examples here in Pennsylvania, where Democrats' registration advantage has fallen by a fifth since the 2012 election to 915,000 voters. More than 85,000 former Democrats have become Republicans this year, almost three times the number of voters who made the opposite switch. And the numbers are also down quite a bit, shrinking by 44,000 in North Carolina, where the Democrats still have a technical advantage, even though a lot of Democrats in the South, of course, tend to vote Republican in recent cycles. So, Jim, not really sure exactly what impact this will have on the presidential race, but if you're a down-ballot Republican, that's really good news.
Yeah, and one thing that jumps out about this is that you might have thought, if you see Trump as a deeply flawed candidate and Hillary, you know, we see her as, you know, every bit as flawed or maybe in all likelihood worse. But, you know, some folks would say, oh, Trump is so bad. He's driving people out of the Republican Party. He's killing the Republican Party. Well, people aren't signing up with the Democratic Party in droves. The Democrats are not benefiting it, at least in terms of people saying, I'm not a Republican anymore. Now I'm a Democrat. I'm jumping on the bandwagon. We should not oversell this, Greg. We should point out that, you know, when you say, oh, good news, the Republican registration deficit in Pennsylvania is down to just 915,000. In all likelihood, those swing states all still look pretty bad for him. I am sure there are some Trump fans who will say, aha, this voter registration means that Trump's really going to win them, you know, and hope lives eternally in the hearts of Trump fans and I guess every partisan everywhere. But look, I mean, it is an indicator that for those who argue that Trump has brought new people into the party, there's some evidence to point to that. This may have happened. Now, he may be driving people away in greater numbers, but we will not know that until Election Day. But at least in what's been an otherwise very grim election year for Republicans, a little bit of good news over here in voter registration numbers.
Certainly the case. And there's also, of course, the point that, as you point out, Hillary Clinton is a horrifically flawed candidate, and that's perhaps why there's not as many people flocking to her side either this year. This is from the Washington Post, and here's more evidence of why people don't like Hillary Clinton, because the lies just keep coming. The FBI's year-long investigation of Hillary Clinton's private email server uncovered tens of thousands more documents from her time as Secretary of State that were not previously disclosed by her attorneys. The State Department is expected to discuss when and how it will release the emails Monday morning in federal court. The total, confirmed by the Justice Department, was disclosed by a conservative legal group, that would be Judicial Watch, after the State Department said last week that it would hand over the emails. The number to be released is nearly 50% more than the 30,000-plus that the Clinton lawyers deemed work-related and returned to the department in December 2014. Lawyers for the State Department and Judicial Watch said in an August 12th court filing that they intended to negotiate a plan for the release, part of a civil public records lawsuit before the court in Washington. Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton tweeting this morning that the FBI found almost 15,000 new Clinton documents. When will state release them? In an interview, he said, quote, it looks like the State Department is trying to slow roll the release of the records. They've had them for at least a month, and we still don't know when we're going to get them. According to Fitton, lawyers for the government say they plan to set a rolling release schedule in October, weeks before November's general election, Jim. So I'm sure her emails about what she wants for lunch are going to be in the first few weeks until the election's behind us. But what do you make of this stunning revelation that Hillary Clinton and her team were dishonest with the legal authorities once again?
So once again, she's disclosed everything she was supposed to disclose except for these 15,000 right over here. So at that point, it's not really everything now, is it? And kind of to quote a piece that will probably become be forthcoming on National Review Online later today. Greg, do you ever get the feeling that the entire, you know, regulatory and ethics and disclosure requirement and law enforcement agencies, that all of Washington just looked at Hillary Clinton and the Clintons and just said, eh, what are we supposed to do? Yeah, you know, it's the Clintons. You know, what do you expect? And they're just going to shrug. like she had, there are disclosure requirements. There are laws over covering this sort of thing. And it just is kind of like, you know, Comey's already given her the free pass. And it's kind of like, oh, she forgot about these 15,000. Oh, okay. No biggie.
I think you're right on that. Remember when Sandy Berger stole the stuff from the National Archives and the only Clinton response was, oh, that's just like Sandy.
Yeah. You know, what is the guy, like a jewel thief, you know? Moonlighting as the Night Fox, the nefarious thief who's constantly stealing the Pink Panther diamond or something. You know, like, and here's the thing. Like, here's the thing. If you have, I don't even think you need a cynical mind. I think you just need a realistic mind. Why would Clinton's national security advisor be going to the National Archives and stuffing stuff into his socks? What is the one? You know, what is the only reason he would be doing something as crazy as that?
Before testifying before the 9/11 Commission? I can't imagine.
Yeah, that there's something really bad in there. There's something really embarrassing. Something that is worth being called out by a librarian for having stuff, you know, for having documents stuffed in your socks. And you got to be, it can't be just like, you know, I belched in the middle of the national security meeting and it was really embarrassing or something like that. It had to be, don't worry about this bin Laden guy. What's he ever going to amount to? You know, it's got to be something that looks so bad that it's worth it. And I don't think we ever figured out what was in those documents.
No, I don't know either. I guess they remain classified. I guess because I assume they took them back. At least I would hope so.
At least that's the ones they found. Greg, God knows where else he put them.
But it all goes to show that when the Clintons have no answer whatsoever, it's exactly that.
Amongst my crowd of conservative bloggers, Greg, we use the title of that infamous nonfiction book and just say, ha, this town. This kind of mirthful response to cynicism of, oh, man, now that's some good corruption right there. That feels like this case of like, oh, I was supposed to disclose these 15,000 documents and I didn't. It slipped my mind. No, it didn't. Greg, you and I are flawed human beings. We have made mistakes. Have you ever forgotten 15,000 documents?
Nope.
I write for a living. I don't know. It probably takes me like years to generate 15,000 documents.
Yes.
You know, I write like 1, 2, 3 a day. That'll get me like 900 by the end of the year. So. You know, we're talking about this on a scale. It's very hard to comprehend. So anyway. So yeah, Clinton's corrupt. Film at 11.
Don't worry. If the State Department doesn't release him before Election Day, I'm sure Julian Assange will.
Boy, it's a dark day when we're rooting for Wikileaks.
It's 2016, Jim. I don't know what else to tell you. That's making strange allies this year. But anyway, speaking of strangeness, let's move to the crazy martini. And by all accounts, last week was probably the most substantive, on-target, positive week for the Donald Trump campaign. In a very, very long time, he got very good reviews from his trip to Louisiana. He, for the most part, stayed on message. He had, of course, the comments that we talked about where he regretted hurtful comments to people throughout the course of this campaign. Kellyanne Conway, the brand new campaign manager, perhaps deserves some credit for that. She was a guest on This Week with George Stephanopoulos. And so, of course, George Stephanopoulos kept after her on whether Trump is actually sorry that he said these things. Is he sorry that other people had their feelings hurt? Did he actually apologize to the cons, to John McCain, to Judge Curiel? And this was clearly the dominant line of the questioning. And as that happened, George Stephanopoulos played a video from earlier this campaign season when Kellyanne Conway was working for a super PAC that was supporting Ted Cruz, where when talking about Donald Trump, she said, "It's vulgar, and do I want somebody who hurls personal insults or who goes and talks about philosophical differences?" So Stephanopoulos says, well, now you're supporting Trump. How do you square that circle? And here's what she said.
"I don't like when people hurl personal insults. That will never change. That's not my style. I'm a mother of four small children. It'd be a terrible example for me to feel otherwise."
You think Mr. Trump's going to change on that?
Well, but he doesn't hurl personal insults. In other words, he, just this week, look what he talked about. He's bringing the case right to communities of color in Michigan, and he's speaking to all Americans when he does that.
And she kept going on with a pretty strong on-message statement. Jim, you almost felt like she caught herself at the very end of that first sentence in that response when she said that Trump doesn't hurl personal insults because she knows that there's way too many tweets and video to back up the contrary. And as you point out in the corner today, Donald Trump did a pretty good job of blowing that up himself this morning. Apparently he was watching Morning Joe and sent out a couple of tweets, one of which is, tried watching low-rated Morning Joe this morning. Unwatchable. At Morning Mika is off the wall, a neurotic and not very bright mess. And he says, someday when things calm down, I'll tell the real story of at Joe NBC and his very insecure longtime girlfriend at Morning Mika. Two clowns. So, Jim, I don't know if this is the beginning of the end of this pivot or whether it's just Trump being Trump.
I'm less surprised by his actions than by Kellyanne Conway, who has, up until, you know, officially signing on with the Trump campaign, seemed to be a relatively clear-headed individual. And deep down, she, in her gut, if you would have put it back to her again, I'm pretty sure she'd say, yeah, he does hurl personal insults. It's kind of a silly assertion for her. She was just in spin mode. And it was just kind of like, you know, if you said, you know, Trump doesn't have a distinctive haircut. Or Trump has no, he doesn't. You know, Trump puts his name on buildings. No, he doesn't. You know, kind of this reflexive, all-purpose denial. Way back when in the Mesozoic era, when I covered Bob Torricelli for the Bergen Record, I used to have a macro on my computer that said, Torricelli spokeswoman Deborah DeShong vehemently denied the allegations. And just whatever the story of the day was, I would just say, Deborah, yeah, okay, and just put it in there. And you get into that mode of all that. Now, she could easily have said, you know, I really wish he wouldn't do that. I think it distracts from his core message, which is very popular. There are a lot of things you could say, but instead, you know, oh, he doesn't hurl personal insults. Yes, he does. So, again, I kind of feel bad for Trump's surrogates who have to go out there and try to insist that 2 + 2 = 5. Rudy Giuliani was just recently saying that, of course, Hillary has health problems. Just Google it. Yeah, you can find sites that say Hillary's, you know, had 4 different strokes in the past week and she's, you know, got robo legs and all these other kind of crazy conspiracy theories. But, you know, she does get in front of audiences and seems to be in relatively okay health for a woman of her age. No one has seen her pass out or collapse or anything like that. If I'm making the case against Hillary, that doesn't strike me as the easiest avenue. I think there are much better ones in terms of her ideology, in terms of her record, in terms of what she's done in state, and most glaringly, obviously, her honesty, and as we talked about with the Clinton Foundation, you know, her corruption. But instead, they're going to say, Google it! There's health. So, this is what Trump does to his surrogates, and I feel, you know, he doesn't serve himself well, and he puts everybody else in a worse position, and you know, but hey, he's got plenty of time to fix it, Greg. There's, you know, voting doesn't start for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, early voting's what, September 9th is the first first phase of that?
September, late September, but not, you know, in a bunch of states, it starts pretty fast in early October. So, you know, chop chop, people.
Jim, he doesn't hurl personal insults, but, well, actually he does, but he does it to make America great again. So you have to put it all in context.
Big insults. He insults bigly. Huge insults.
Can't wait to see what this week has in store for us. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks very much for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.